This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to Just Rugby NZ, where we'll talk about anything as long as it's rugby. I'm Grant Harding, and with me to talk the talk is Rugby News magazine editor Campbell Burns. Well, Campbell, the NPC now down to the final two. Top seed after the regular season, Wellington, and fourth seed, Bay of Plenty, overcoming Waikato and Canterbury. Bay of Plenty Canterbury was first up in Tauranga, and after an uncertain first half, which left the home team trailing 13-8 in no small part due to goal-kicking wobbles, they came out in the second half and ran away with it, 32-20, 4-2. So, Campbell, for the first time since the inaugural NPC in 1976, this year's Real Bay have a shot at the title.
They certainly do. 48 years ago with Tuck Walker lifting the Rugby Cup, I was only 2 years old, so I can't remember that. But I do remember some very good Bay of Plenty sides over the years falling short. And, of course, it's 20 years since they won their first Ranfurly Shield, which was marked only last week as well. So, Bay of Plenty, they came home strong in that second half on the back of some really good forward play and some run and gun tactics in their back line. So a very impressive victory there, and they were praying for a Waikato victory in the capital later that night, but it wasn't to be. But they'll still be very, very happy to be in the final, and I would give them a decent shot at taking that first title in 48 years.
Sure, and look, 4-2. At halftime, I thought the game had meandered a little bit in the first half. The teams were feeling each other out. It looked like it was suiting Canterbury down to the ground, but tremendous try from Halaholo straight after halftime, and then Leroy Carter snuck in at the corner there. Whether his foot was out or not, it's hard to tell, but looking at the side on, he seemed to be airborne when he pressed it, so great try it was. And the impact of the bench was a major factor.
Certainly was. And in particular, Lucas Cashmore came on at 10, pushing Caleb Truss to fullback. And Cashmore took the ball to the line and just seemed to unleash the outsides a bit more. So that was a critical replacement that that paid off there for Richard Watt, the Steamers coach. So there was this compelling mix of workers in the forward pack and X-factor out wide, you know, the energy of Leroy Carter, the good midfield combo of Halaholo and Narua. So they were able to come home on the back of that, and some great leadership from Naitoa Akoi at lock there, who's been outstanding really for the entire season for the Steamers.
Well, it was at time we started talking about Naitoa in All Black terms. I know he's been a New Zealand 15 player. He's going away at the end of this season. He went away the last time New Zealand 15 was assembled. But he's a big presence. He's a skillful player, excellent line-out option, strong defender, and a nuisance really with his physicality at the breakdown. Can play either flanker or lock.
Well, he can. No, he's the upside for Naitoa Akoi is huge. He wears pink nail varnish, I think, on his fingernails, which is a bit different. He likes going fishing with Kurt Eklund as his skipper. But other than that, his rugby speaks for itself. He's just an outstanding footballer who, as you say, can play six or lock. And the interesting thing is that if Manaaki Selby Rickett had not been injured at the start of the year, I think Akoi would have been on the side at number six, but he slotted into the engine room there, and with Justin Sangster ruled out with injury, he's just been outstanding. So he can't be that far away from All Blacks contention. I think there was another injury or two in some of in the locking ranks. He would have to come into consideration.
Well, there's still one more spot to fill there. I know they're sort of banking on one of those three injured All Blacks who were announced last week to come back, but you just never know. And showing good form, coming through with good form at this time of the year, it puts you right in front of the selectors. You mentioned some interesting names there. Leroy Carter, who's obviously going to the Chiefs next year. He's left the Sevens program, but he's just got better and better as the season's gone on. But Cashmore, his involvement in that final try, what a stunner that was when he went up the middle and Finia Nofo, he ran off him and then fed Pia. That was just That was Bay of Plenty. When they're on top of you, they can really run over you.
Well, they can. And, I mean, Cashmore, he's come some good genes. Nephew of Adrian Cashmore, the former All Black and Bay fullback. But Cashmore didn't get a lot of game time this year for the Blues. Maybe only three or four games off the bench. But like, he's shown he's a quality footballer. We know Caleb Trask has been good value for them. But I do wonder where the fullback is his best position. And certainly Cashmore coming on at 10, not necessarily transforming the back line, but just got them moving a bit more. And they were able to play that... you know, that expansive game, that offloading game, support play, and they really came home strong.
Well, apparently Kurt Eklund furrowed the brow at halftime rather than Richard Watt and gave them a bit of a serve that, you know, they didn't want to be, didn't want to come out on the wrong side of this one, and it certainly worked. Canterbury end their season, they've won 7, lost 5, but were you surprised at how meekly they went into the night after their huge away victory against Tasman in the quarterfinal? Okay, no, the All Blacks, Derry, Newell and Bell weren't there, but ill discipline, poor handling and beaten in so many areas.
Yeah, I wasn't entirely surprised because Canterbury have been up and down like a yo-yo this season. They really have. Billy Harmon's been the constant for them, very consistent. But he alluded to that in the post-match interview about that the drop balls and the ill discipline. So you take out the three All Blacks forwards from last weekend, and they weren't quite as solid up front as they had been previously. But yeah, look, it was I mean, yeah, it's a weird thing with Canterbury. 3 weeks ago, they lost by their worst score in 145 years, and then 2 weeks after that, they bounced back and absolutely decimated Tasman. But I did wonder whether they would have that consistency and the wherewithal up against a very tough Bay of Plenty side at home, and so it proved.
Well, we have been picking Bay of Plenty for quite a few weeks now as a side that has a lot of all-round ability. But my impression of this season is that very few Canterbury Crusaders players have enhanced their reputation. Some are coming to the end. Others who have been near the top have simply not played well. So I hope the Red and Black Notebook is not going to come out when they seek New Zealand 15 replacements. You know, they may have already named them, but I haven't heard. Well, if the Steamers cruised to victory in the end, the semi-final in Wellington went all the way. The Lions were down 15-17 at half-time, but came home strongly with big plays at crucial times. Some luck with the bounce of the ball and their experienced players leading the way. Campbell.
Well, that's right. The Lions, they actually had to withstand a pretty fierce challenge from Waikato. Aaron Cruden, I thought, controlled the game really well for them. Ollie Mathis was X factor again, and box office on the wing with that brilliant try of his. So Wellington had to soak up a fair bit. But look, Du Plessis Corriffy, what, his second game back from a fractured jaw, just played like it was there was no tomorrow. And his comment after the game that it was an absolute pleasure to play in that game, told about the brutal intensity of it. That was probably as physical a provincial NPC game as you will ever see. There was a lot of claret. There was a bit of niggle. There was just some heavy work in the from both packs, and Corriffy was right amongst it. He just relished that, winning crucial turnovers and just getting Wellington home, really. So that was a virtuoso display from Corriffy, and I know he's in that All Blacks 15, but gee, with Sam Kane departing, how close is he to the All Blacks? He may be lacking a couple of kgs, but he doesn't lack any heart.
Well, if he's lacking kgs, I don't notice the way he plays. You know, the man had blood all over his face at the end of the game. He is a guy who any rugby player would love to play with. Similarly, you know, Brad Shields, they without Amour, without Billy Proctor, Perenara and Love from the previous weekend, it was those two who guided this team. If you looked at the first try by Preston, it was a Shields clean out which gave the hole to Higgins. Then the yellow card came for Higgins and Wellington scored. And they scored off the back of Shields, Karifi and Numia taking the ball up several metres right up to the goal line from where Lauaki scored. And then in the second half when Waikato was still there, still fighting for it, Karifi turnovers. 1-2, you know, and that is leadership.
Well, it is. And I mean, with Peter Luck, so Shields stepped into the boot of the scrum. He's probably more effective at number 6, but he showed his leadership. They were up against a very young, hungry Waikato Loose trio, who'd been good all season, but they just got right amongst them and had the edge there, the Wellington. So, and also with Caleb Delaney, who's a good ball winner at six. That's a pretty well balanced loose trio there. So, I know that Babe Plenty, who have a very good loose trio of their own, you know, they're going to have to work out how to nullify that. That breakdown area where Cariffy is so good.
That passion, yeah. Wellington also without Peter Umanga Jensen and Jackson Garden Bishop, who they're hoping to get back. Matt Proctor also on the injury list. Glad you brought up Peter Larkway. So Waikato go out with a record of 1-6, lost 6. Not overly impressive, but they were a competitive team, and to get up and play as well as they did against Wellington after a tough quarter final against Taranaki was a credit to them. They were also without Luke Jacobson and Savapini Finau for this match. We'll preview the final a little bit later, but it's the Heartland Championship we go to now. It concluded on the weekend with two absolutely wonderful finals. After 3 years of South Canterbury dominance, the Meads Cup for teams ranked 1-4 in the regular season was assured of a new winner. And in the end, at home, Thames Valley got up over Mid-Canterbury 37-29 at Boyd Park in Te Araha on Sunday. Oh, Saturday, wasn't it? To regain the trophy they won in 2018. Campbell, the Swamp Foxes, 28 up at half-time, fell behind 22-20, took control midway through the second half, and were helped in no small measure by excellent goal-kicking by Quinn Collard. Four tries apiece. Otherwise, I think he kicked every goal, Collard. But not only that, Collard's 50-22, which set up the line-out from which they scored their fourth try, that was Don Clark proportions. Simply unbelievable. That must have been a 75-metre touchfinder.
That was a huge play. And it just shows you goal kicking in those big matches. I mean, four tries each. It came down to that. I mean, Thames Valley deserved to win. I think they had their nose slightly in front the whole time, but a fierce challenge from Mid-Canterbury. But Collard, you're 7 from 7 in a final like that at fullback, complementing the hat trick by Laulea Mau, I think the blindside flanker. So, an outstanding final at Boyd Park, Te Araha. Probably the best day of rugby that town's seen since Terry Shaw kicked the late drop goal for Thames Valley to beat Australia in 1962. They have, of course, won an MPC Division 3 since then and the 2018 Meads Cup. But that was a great day out for Thames Valley rugby. And this is a small union, but very well organised, some good coaching structures and some players who just front up with all heart, plus complemented by a couple of lone players and their player of origin. I mean, Fletcher Morgan at 12 was really good for them too. Cam Dromgall, the number 7 in his 50th game, well led by Matty Exton at number 8, Exton's. As a former Swamp Fox myself, I was bursting with pride on Saturday afternoon.
No, great result. I think they were MPC Third Division champs on three occasions. So to get the spoils this season in the Meads Cup level for the second time was fantastic. But Mid-Canterbury, they really came through towards the end of the season. And that winger, the Fijian winger on the left, Raitubi Vasura Kuta, man, he is some unit.
Oh, he is. They had some really good players. I mean, although they only they qualified fourth Mid-Canterbury, I mean, this is a side that struggled last year, but they've hit back, and they were just really tenacious, particularly at the breakdown. But, yeah, they had the danger man on the wing, and both the Rakuta, but also the other winger, Griffith, who scored a good try. They had some good players, and I think a couple of them have filtered into that Heartland 15. So that was that was a decent effort from the Hammers there.
Yeah, it was indeed. And the Lahore Cup for teams placed 5-8 after the regular season, an absolutely stunning clash. King Country got home in a 90-point thriller following extra time, 46-44 over West Coast last season's champion. The Coasties, who were hammered by King Country earlier in the season, were not daunted by the venue, Rugby Park in Te Kauiti. And Campbell, this could not have been any more dramatic. The Coast scoring on full time to make it 34-all before the first five, Jacob Wakery Jones, wide-angle conversion, hit the left end, upright, went right, but not over the bar.
Oh, it's a very fine margins. I mean, that could have been a stunning defence of the Lahore Cup by West Coast. As it was, they almost, if it had gone on any longer, they may still have scored it, tried to take it after 102 minutes, I think it was. But players were cramping up left, right and centre, and it was crazy. So the subs bench was like rolling subs by the end, because just players just could hardly stand up. So just dramatic stuff. Good crowd there at Rugby Park in Te Kauiti, and I'm very happy for King Country because they've had some tough years of late, but I saw Stan Mead in the crowd and he would have been very, very happy at what he saw because that was gutsy stuff. Liam Rowlands, the hooker and captain, was inspirational. The fullback, Cody Nordstrom, who played four games for Waikato last year, was outstanding at the back. But, look, fair play to West Coast. They just gave it 100% there, and they could well, small margins, if that kick had gone over, it could have been them celebrating into the night. So an outstanding advertisement for the Heartland Championship, and that Lahore Cup still evokes a lot of passion, even though it's second tier.
Stan Meads, what a lovely man he is. When you think a Patrick Headley conversion, the King Country kicker, he had one that bounced off the upright and over. That's how close this game was. It was King Country's first Lahore Cup win since 2015, and their trophy cabinet looking good. The Bill Osborne Tonga also in their hands. Nine of the players in the Meads Cup final, six from Thames Valley, three from Mid Canterbury, and then in the Lahore Cup final, two from King Country, are among the seven Heartland unions represented in New Zealand Heartland 15, who will take on a New Zealand Māori selection in Whanganui next Tuesday, followed by the New Zealand Barbarians on November the 2nd. Great to see the Barbarians involved. Former All Black and New Zealand Māori hooker Hika Elliott is one of eight South Canterbury players in the squad. He also played for the Classic All Blacks recently. The team will be coached by South Canterbury's Nigel Walsh and Poverty Bay's Maya Nakora. We say every week we only talk about rugby on the show, but you've got to make the odd exception. What a week in New Zealand sport. Ali Wollaston, double gold medalist at the World Track Cycling Champs. First time ever a New Zealander has achieved that. The America's Cup is still New Zealand's Cup, even in Spain. The Black Caps beat India in India for the first time since 1988, and Russian Ravindra continues towards global superstardom. The Silver Ferns thrashed Australia in the first of four netball tests. Liam Lawson's returned to Formula One. Don't know how he's going. And the White Ferns were white hot in beating South Africa in the final of the T20 World Cup this morning. Yeah, that was just sensational. Well done, the White Ferns. You're a credit to your family, friends, country and your sport, but mostly to yourselves because you face the wind and you come through. $260,000 each isn't bad either. You have to say, Campbell, that's pretty tough for rugby to compete with over the past week.
Well, it was. I mean, I certainly enjoyed all the rugby on the weekend, the four big games, all MVC and Heartland playoffs, but no, it was an outstanding week all round for New Zealand sport. And I guess now the challenge is if the All Blacks can go and put five wins on the board and five quality performances, then they can finish the season without too many rocks under that old proverbial beach towel, I guess. But no, there's a fair bit to live up to for rugby and the All Blacks, so it's over to them from next weekend in Japan.
Well, I'm glad you've done my throw for me because that's exactly what it is about. You know, one team who we can expect to compete in that rarefied landscape is the All Blacks, and they go back into action in Japan this weekend against a side of unknown quality, Campbell. The mad Professor Eddie Jones continues to experiment in international rugby with a squad featuring five new caps, and he's already named 17 new caps in their season to date. What do you make of that?
Well, it's always hard to know what Eddie's cooking up, and until we see the teams run out, I do know that Japan pushed the All Blacks very, very hard only 2 years ago when Eddie wasn't at the helm. He was still with England then. But look, it's a funny one because the All Blacks won't be at absolute full noise with their selections, but I'd like to see them have enough players who are fit and firing in there just to make sure they get the job done. So I think Scott Robertson, he's not going to be too zany with his selection, but I suspect that Eddie Jones might because he knows there won't be any pressure on him to win the match, but he can certainly uncover some gems, if you like, within his squad. So I'll be interested to see both the sides and then the performances of both sides when they run out on Saturday night.
Yeah, it's been fairly quiet on the All Blacks media front, but I think, you know, we can guess that the team will feature a lot of the wider squad members. But since last week when we talked, three loose forwards, Ethan Blackadder, Luke Jacobson and Dalton Papali'i, ruled out at least initially. And as you mentioned earlier, Peter Larkai coming into the squad and Josh Lord. And Hoskins Satutu would have come into the squad, but for an injury. What do you know about that?
Not too much other than that he had a knee injury that he's supposedly been nursing through for a few weeks, which seems strange because I don't recall that much strapping on his knee, and he certainly didn't play like he was injured. So you'd have to – well, I mean, Scott Robertson says that in consultation with the county's Manukau medical team, they've come to that call that he's not fit, that may be the case. I don't know. We haven't heard from Hoskins himself. There is obviously a fair bit of speculation about his future. But I just know from the rugby side of thing, it's good that the All Blacks hadn't forgotten about him and they'd rewarded him with NPC form by calling him up. And it was a shame that he's not able to take his place there. So it's still all a bit cloudy, but he is contracted to New Zealand Rugby till 2026. So unless something drastic happens, I'd expect him to be certainly fronting for the Blues next season at least.
Yeah, let's hope so. Look, an advance party, I believe, is heading up to England later this week, Thursday, I think it is. You know, so they're taking on this Japanese team. They've lost to England, Georgia, Italy and Fiji this year. They squared a two-match series with the Maori All Blacks and beat Canada, USA and Samoa to finish runner-up in the Pacific Nations Cup. What do you want to see from the All Blacks in this test?
Well, it's certainly a good solid victory and a decent performance, which approaches 80 minutes. I think they would set the right tone for the for this tour. I think there's no question that we'll win, although I say that slightly nervously, but I really think that all things being equal, we should win by 20 to 30 points. So I'm looking for the performances, combinations, and for the likes of Cam Roygaard to have a run, Patrick Tuipulotu to have a run, no injuries and a decent victory. And then they can head to England to join that advance party and put together close to their top side and really put pressure on England, who will have their first head out of the autumn tests.
Well, I think it'd be a fair bet that the likes of Reuben Love and Peter Larkai will make their debuts on Saturday as well. And, you know, in 2021, I remember an awful test against Italy, which really damaged some reputations. It was won easily on the scoreboard in the end, but it was a truly awful game. And these games mean a lot when you're building a reputation within the All Blacks.
Well, that's right. certainly given that they've got three massively hard tests to follow, a poor performance against Japan would just would not have rugby fans in good heart. And I just think it's just another chance, really, with a test match that's not quite at the South Africa level of intensity where we showed up well. To show what some of the not so much second stringers but wider squad members can do. So there's a lot riding on it, and a decent victory will be very much imperative.
Australia's Jordan Wade a referee the test in Yokohama, which kicks off at 6:50 p.m. on Saturday. And the following week it will be Angus Gardner in England and Nick Berry in Ireland, all Australians. I note a bit of noise coming out of English, Irish and French camps about the All Blacks having an advantage, having played under the trial laws, which will be in operation during the autumn series.
Yeah, well, there's almost as much noise as Johnny Sexton's book, if you like. But I don't think that's going to have a major impact. That red card, 20-minute red card, I think that's going to be happening. I mean, that's hardly going to be an advantage to anyone unless there's something bad happen with discipline. So it's just another tweak. You have to roll with these in rugby. So I don't see that as any real issue at all. And some of those northern sides have a prime opportunity to take an All Black scalp. So hope they're not using those as an excuse if they don't do that.
Well, you would hope not. I mean, but yes, it will keep them moving a little bit quicker at scrums and lineouts, and you know, that's what we want. We want their players being worn out, so that we can play the game that we want to play. New Zealand 15 players heading out on Saturday and Sunday for the six involved in the NPC final, although the All Blacks could do worse than call up Karifi, as we said, or Arakoi after the final. I've heard nothing at all around who will replace Satutu, Larkai and Lord in the New Zealand 15. A few names, though. Braden Uosi, Devin Flanders, Nikora Broughton, Mitchell Dunshay, Sean Worthy. Any others, Campbell?
No, I think that's you've just about covered that. I mean, some of these guys have been finished for a couple of weeks now. And so whether they've been told to train on, who knows. But certainly, with Waikato and Canterbury knocked out, so that'll make it easier to organise those players. And really, you'd have to say that, the All Blacks 15, when they fly out, you'd like to give the players who played in the final some respite. So hopefully they don't have to fly out at 6 a.m. on Sunday after the final.
Yeah, Exactly. Bit of news. Blues and North Harbour winger Cade Banks has joined the Hurricanes after a stellar try-scoring effort in the NPC. Women's Rugby World Cup pools have been announced for next year. New Zealand's got Ireland, their recent nemesis at the WXV1, Japan and Spain. Campbell, the NPC final on Saturday afternoon. That's what we're looking forward to. A 3:05 kickoff, I believe it is. Wellington with home advantage proved crucial in the semis, but I expect a big contingent to head south from the Bay as they go in search of their first ever finals win, you know, playing in a final. Where's it going to be won and by whom?
Well, the first thing is I'd like to see a crowd of 10,000 plus there, which would be nice for a showpiece. We saw 13,000, I think, in New Plymouth last year for it. But I think that Wellington Packer, that, and certainly the breakdown, Kariffi will want to command that. But This Bay of Plenty side has been pretty tigerish there as well. So whoever gets the edge at the breakdown can perhaps dictate the tempo of the game. So Wellington may have the edge there, but if they can somehow nullify Kariffi, perhaps keep him busy tackling a lot rather than jackling, then Bay of Plenty could have a real show because they have some real X factor. They have a good midfield combination. I do wonder whether they'll play Cashmore at 10 and Trask at 15. Then the rest of it is, I know Wellington are really stretched for numbers in certain positions, certainly at hooker. I think Pinelli Poasa has been ruled out. Lenny Uppie's side was almost on one leg. So they're going to be stretched a bit, the Lions. So they're going to have to play with a lot of heart, which they can do. But Bay of Plenty is the sort of side that can certainly disrupt them. But that breakdown will be the key area.
Do you see the young Wellington inside backs as being a potential target for Bay of Plenty?
Well, not so much Kyle Preston, who I think has been one of the best nines in the competition. Scored a couple of tries last week. He's been really good. So I don't think it'll be a problem there. I don't know whether Jackson Garden-Bashir will be fit. If he is, he'll certainly play. But Callum Harkham did a couple of good things, kicked a few goals. The Old Boys University 10. He, of course, has a good combination in there with from club play with Preston. So I think he's a pretty decent footballer, and I don't think there'll be more pressure than usual on him. It's just a question of further out wide. So he's got Riley Higgins. Will Peter Umunga Jensen be back? So that'd be great if he could slot in there to have some wiser heads, some more experienced heads outside him.
Yeah, with Matt Proctor injured as well, it would be great to have Peter back from concussion. Look, Richard Watt, a homecoming. He was a Wellington man, a Paniki man. You know, he's coming home to coach this Bay of Plenty team. Naitoa Arkoi, he's a Wellington man. Petone, there's a lot on this game that makes it so interesting.
Oh, yeah, there is. I mean, you know, it's fair to say Watt, he's done a great job with his team. He had a lot of injuries at the start of the year. He had guys coming in and out. He moved Imani Narawa to centre, and that well, not so much a gamble, but that paid off in spades. So he's pulled the right strings. He moved Arkoi into lock. He's got some really big performances out of the likes of Kurt Eklund, Nikora Broughton, and Willis Holoholo at 12. So he's just got some wise heads mixed with some real young talent there, and he's a straight shooter, Watty, and I think he's done really well. So I think there'll be a lot of teams who would pick, or a lot of fans who would pick Bay of Plenty as their second favourite team now.
Yeah, absolutely, and maybe congratulations to Orlando Soakai as well. He's a first year coach, isn't he? I think he is, Orlando.
I think he's second year, but he's done well. He played his rugby for Otago, but he's obviously bought into that scene in Wellington. I mean, there's a parochial club scene there, a lot of really good Pacific Island talent, which he's been able to harness in there, and mixed with guys coming back. Peter Larkoi is a loss for them. He's done it all year for them, played well, but then he can call on a Brad Shields to pack down at the back of the scrum. So he's been able to roll with the punches. Now he's got a bit of an injury list, but I know he'll be pumped up.
Well, really it is, as you say. It's going to be about who can turn up one more time, who can win the big moments, who can maintain discipline, make the right decisions, and who will provide their team with inspiration. I can't wait. Wellington haven't won a final at home, apparently. Bay of Plenty, not since 1976. Outstanding stuff. Well, that's it for this week. as we look forward to the NPC final and international rugby's resumption next weekend. On behalf of Rugby News magazine editor Campbell Burns, I'm Grant Harding. Catch you next week.